Lincoln High School. Very, very capable, outstanding administrator. When I went there as ag teacher, they didn't have, they had put the ag department within the main building. And of course, with the amount of noise with saws and hammers and all that type of stuff that we did as an ag department, nobody could do anything in that building, especially on that end. So I went to the superintendent's office and I told him, Charlie Davis. I said, Mr. Davis, I don't think it's wise to have an ag department in New High School. So he agreed after we talked. He agreed. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. We don't have money to build a separate building. He said, but I'll go to Camp Butner and I'll get two Quonset huts and we'll put them together. One will be your classroom and one will be your shop, temporarily, until we can get money to build a building. And that's what we did. He put the Quonset hut together right down the hill from Lincoln. And that's, for a number of years, that was where my classroom was and my shop. One day, came to me, he said, R.D., he said, I got money for your building. The school board has allocated money for your building. He said, now, I want you to design that building just like you want it. I want you to design it just like you want it, so there would be no question as to whether or not it'll meet your needs. I said, thank you. The building that is at Lincoln now, the building behind the main building, was the one that I designed. I designed it with classroom, storage facilities, a bathroom, a shop, and a separate heating system. I did that because as ag teacher, I've had night classes there for adult farmers. And in the main building, the heat went down, was dropped down. So I had to have my own heating system. I also didn't like for my students to have to go out of that building to get water or to go to the bathroom, because there's a tremendous amount of time lost when kids have to go from one building to another for the basic necessities of life. So we put a bathroom in there, we put a water fountain in there, we put a separate heating system and everything. And when I drew the rough plan, The superintendent of utilities was Gray Cubbock, who this school is named for, Cubbock Junior High School is named for. He was on the school board, and he was in charge of university utilities. He looked at him, he said, R.D., there's only one thing wrong with this thing. You don't have enough light in there. So over every work bench on each side of that building, that shop area, he put fluorescent lights right over each work bench. And that's the only change that they made in that building. They built it just like I had designed it.
Bet you felt a little pride, man.
Oh, I felt very much pride because, you know, to have a building that the kids didn't have to go out, and the one that I could say I designed it. This is my design. Because at one point in our instruction in agriculture, the students had to do research in different areas of, they were dealing with poultry, and they had to do some research in diseases of poultry. And we had bulletins in the back, in the room back there, in which they could go back, close off, and I could still teach out here, but they could still do their research back there in the back, see? And then if I gave them an assignment on, say, diseases of poultry, or if they had some problems with their poultry flock, when I first came here, the people had cholera in hogs. Lost a lot of hogs with cholera right down on the branch down here. One of my first jobs was to inoculate or vaccinate hogs for cholera. I mean, they lost 400 and 500 pound hogs because of cholera. So if students had any type of disease in their herd, or in their crops, they did research. They go back and really look into what causes it and what method to do to control it and everything. They knew how to do it when they got home. And that way, see, I could go out and tell the farmers, do so and so and so and so. But if their son came home and said, Daddy, this is what we ought to be doing. And that way, the chances are that the father, the adult farmer, would listen to their son. Where they might not listen to me, because a lot of them would say, well, I've been doing this for 40 years, you know. But if his son came home and said, Daddy, I read a bulletin, I did some research, Mr. Smith made me do so and so and so, and I came up with this, and he agreed to it. And one of my primary objectives was to make changes in the way farmers did things, the way they, the crops they planted, you know, the livestock that they raised. In other words, improve practices. That was our main thing. Establish improved practices in farm operation in the farms that you have persuaded students on.
You had an impact not only on the students, but on the community around here about changing farming practices.
Oh, yeah, we did. We did. And then not only that, but see, we offered, the home ec teacher and I offered adult classes for farmers and their wives. The home ec teacher would talk about, you know, cooking and sewing and that type of thing. And I was talking about farm management, farm operations. And we'd all do it at night. Those farmers would come in at night for 1 hour. We just had about an hour's instruction. But they got to the point where they'd either come in here or we'd go out to rural schools or rural churches, wherever we could get a group together. See, we'd go out to them rather than they coming in to us.
Was your course an elective?
What's that?
Was your course
yes.
an elective?
Yes, it was an elective.
And how many classes would you teach in a day?
I teach all, well, I teach half a day. My job was to teach half a day, which was about 4 classes. The other half a day, we were out in the community, visiting the farms and the farmers, working with farmers and stuff. I taught only half a day, and then went out in the community the other half. Sometimes I'd stay out in the school until dark, you know, that depends on what I wanted to do.
How many students would be in the class of those four?
About classes? 20 to 25 students in each class. It all depends, you know. Since it was a volunteer class, it depends on the number of, and most of the, a large number of the students, even though they lived out in the rural area, they had hogs and chickens and cows in town. Because there was no restriction on it back then. See, they'd have a little project. As I said, farmers had hogs all along that branch down there. And then the young people would do it. I started in connection with a local person here, the Umstead family. I started a pig chain with the local veterinarian, and Mr. John Umstead, who was in the legislature. We started the pig chain. We had Dr. Oldham, who had a dairy out here in Carver, gave us a purebred bull so that farmers would have a place that they could, that was one of our efforts to increase the quality of the herd. They'd have a place that they could come and breed their cows, a purebred Jersey bull. And we kept it moved right down there at the branch. And the boys would take care of him, feed him and everything else, water, everything. Well, for about 3 or 4 years until we moved from over there, Orange County Trade School down to Lincoln. So we had a lot of things going on in connection with our responsibility for improved practices in farming in this community. But other than that, and then of course we worked with student activities. As I said, I drove the activity bus for the football team. Wherever that football team went, I drove the bus. If they had a game, home game, I'd pick them up, carry them out. We played out at Carver Lions Park, which is out on Fidelity Street in Carver. That's where both high schools played football. and we go away if we had an away game. I'd drive the bus to the kids. I did a lot of things that for the success of the school program. Since I was doing halftime as a teacher, and the other half I'd be out in the community. So a lot of times Mr. McDougal's asked me, well, why don't you just take the kids to so and so and so? This afternoon was. At homecoming parade, I just moved stuff in my shop. We put all the, if anybody want to have a float, they'd get the wagon or whatever they want to build that float on and put it in their shop. And the kids would come in there at night and they'd build their floats. And it stayed in there until parade day so that there wouldn't be much work in the shop during the time that they was in there because they'd have them, you know, all over the place. But we working with them at night and building their float for the parade, for homecoming parade. So a whole lot of things that we did, you know.
Did you try to influence any of your students to go on to Hampton?
We always thought that the only place to go was to Hampton. and some of them went, some students went to Hampton. But it got to the point where it was, the state began to assist in kids who want to go to college. You know, they had the different scholarships and things like that. And a lot of them went to local schools, Fayetteville, Liberty City, Durham, Greensboro, A&T, and that type of thing, because the same type of programs were available and they're close to home. So a lot of them, and it was probably cheaper. I finally, even my own children didn't want to go to Hampton. I said, one of my oldest daughter went to Hampton for the summer program, and she didn't want to go to Hampton because her aunt was a switchboard operator at Hampton. She figured that her aunt would be spying on her. My son went to Hampton. My son graduated from Hampton with honors in math. But he's the only one that in the family that went to Hampton.
How many children did you have?
Four. I have four children. Three girls. As I said, twin girls. Another girl, the oldest one, is a girl. And my son is the youngest of the group. But we had four youngsters, 10 grandchildren. But back to Lincoln. One of our basic objectives was working with the students in developing that same pride. That's one of the things that I think we were successful in, because not only did the students themselves have pride in Lincoln and their accomplishment at Lincoln, the band and the chorus and drama club and the football team and the basketball team and all were outstanding. But that's some of the things I think they lost when integration started, that pride. And you can see it because in my home, at my high school, the graduates developed what they call Lincoln High, Dillard High Alumni and Friends. Now they have graduates of Dillard High School all over the country, but they raise money for scholarships for Dillard High graduates. They bought the old Dillard High School, the one I went to, and they turned it into an incubator. That is, if somebody wanted to start a business, then they would have a room there to start that business in, and until they got established in the community. Then they would, of course, go out and rent their own places or build their own places. And it's still going. They have, as an anchor tenant in that building, they have a beauty clock school, and they have a business that makes shrouds for women. Those are the two anchor tenants in that high school. Now, in one of the elementary schools that they bought when they was closed, they have 7 aside classrooms for sororities and fraternities and social organizations. They have their own room in there, and they can decorate it any kind of the way they want to. Their club colors or their sorority colors, anything. And of course, they can't pay rent. They just assist with the utilities. And of course, they have to maintain their room, paint it, and do everything like that. But the Alumni Association owns it.
Really took a lot of pride.
That was the type of pride that the Afro-Americans had in their schools in Goldsboro.
Did they have the same pride here?
The same type of pride at Lincoln High School. That's what they had. Same type of pride. Not only did the students have the pride, but see, a lot of the parents who were here graduated from Orange County Trade School, and they had pride over there. That same pride was transferred to their kids in Lincoln.
They had an active PTA.
Very active. When you had PTA meetings, you had overflow crowds of parents going to PTA meetings. I mean, PTAs were active. That's what I say, the PTA raised money for the first activity bus. They said, we want an activity bus for our kids. So they went out and found a bus, found out how much it would cost, and raised the money to buy that bus. $2,600. That's what it costs.
Well, I think I've held you here long enough, Marty. I really appreciate the interview. And I look forward to learning more about the schools here tomorrow and the next day.
All right, let me just check with my wife and see what we have on docket. Then we can set a date.
Okay.